I would like to thank the organizers and all the people who put heroic effort to get this slideshow on the screen. So I'm going to be talking about the spectral form factor, and I'm going to talk about early time and late time dynamics, and I'm also going to have a digression about the Riemann zeta function. This is work mostly with Brian Swingle and also Victor Galitsky. He's the good-looking one. So the plan is, first I'm just going to give two perspectives on quantum chaos. Spoiler alert, it's relaxation versus spectral statistics. I'm going to talk about how the SFF, which is the spectral form factor, famously a diagnostic of spectral statistics, is also a diagnostic of thermalization. I'm going to make that quantitative with my favorite quantity, the total return probability. And then the second half, I'm going to talk about how the SFF actually slightly suppressed around the Heisenberg time. I'm going to explain this in terms of something called the Riemann-Siegel lookalike, and I'm going to give an explicit formula for the late-time SFF. So the first part of this talk is based on a paper we put out about 2 years ago, and the second part is based on a paper we put out around 1 week ago. So our notions of early-time chaos. So there's quantum thermalization. I probably don't need to spend too much time explaining that to the people in this room. The idea is the system starts in some particular state, the billiard ball is on this side of the table, whatever, and then it'll relax to some state where the billiard ball is evenly spread out. And there's this notion of ergodicity, which is if you wait long enough, the billiard ball will explore all of Hilbert space, and that's not bad for a billiard ball, but if we look at a macroscopic system like Brian Swingle, the Hilbert space is incredibly large, and it is infeasible to explore the entire Hilbert space of Brian Swingle in Brian Swingle's lifetime. So there's this time scale issue of how do we, there's this exponentially long time to sample Hilbert space, and there's this finite, reasonable equilibration time. Just to make it more concrete for those of you who like actual things, we have a billiard ball. If you, shot it around this table, the paths would diverge exponentially, and very soon your localized wave packet would fill the entire table. Seemingly unrelated, there's this notion of level repulsion. So I have, these are my favorite histograms to show in this sort of talk. The one I'm currently shooting a laser at is the eigenvalues of a random matrix. Notice how smooth and pretty that histogram is. You wouldn't mind sitting on that histogram. And then we have this much spikier histogram, which is just a Poissonian set drawn from the same overall distribution. And you would indeed mind sitting on that. There's a famous conjecture, which at this point is not a conjecture, it's a fact, which says that all quantum chaotic systems have these nice smooth energy level distributions. And if we want to quantify how much you would like to sit on a histogram, we have a quantity called the spectral form factor, which is, technically we're going to be talking about the connected spectral form factor, which is the variance of the Fourier transform of the density of states, but it's a simple mathematical function from that to the sum of squares of the spikiness of that histogram. And if you have level repulsion, then the eigenvalues will repel each other and they will smooth out the histogram and make it a better chair. This is just a graph of the connected SFF in the simplest random matrix ensemble, GUE. It is linear and then or at this time called the Heisenberg time, which is 2 pi times the inverse level spacing, it gets flat where it'll remain for all eternity. We can calculate the first part of the SFF, that linear part, using what's called the diagonal approximation. So the SFF can be expressed as a product of traces of unitaries. If we do a saddle point approximation, and this doesn't have to be a physical ball, this could be in zillion dimensional space. If we do a saddle point approximation, we have all these pairs of saddles. Sometimes we will have the same saddle on the right and the left. Sometimes we'll have different saddles. And the diagonal approximation is just saying that all of these are on average zero. We can throw them out and focus only on the cases where we have the same saddle point on the right and the left and their actions cancel. And yeah, this gives us this beautiful, perfect linear ramp if you handle all the like factors of everything. So how are these two things related? So for that, I'm going to do the simplest model of thermalization I can, which is a billiard with two chambers. So the ball will start in sector one. It'll very quickly spread all throughout sector one. And then it'll very, very slowly get through that little hole into sector two. So there's one slow mode. If you like looking at random matrices more than physical systems, it's a Hamiltonian that looks like this. You have two large random matrices and then a weak coupling between them, which is the hole in the wall. And this changes the way the diagonal approximation works. So if there's a slower relaxation, then it's much, much easier to have a periodic orbit. If the ball starts on the left, it's more likely to end on the left and vice versa. So this either means that there's more returning paths or that the returning paths have larger amplitudes. And either way, this is going to lead to an enhancement of the SFF. And the enhancement is precisely something called the total return probability. So the total return probability is the sum over all sectors of the probability of returning to that sector after time t. So these sectors could be something simple, like up or down, or right or left chamber. Or they could be something incredibly complicated. Like if you have a hydrodynamic system, each sector will be the entire energy distribution, like distribution of energy in space. So there'll be exponentially many of them in volume. Notice that this formula makes no reference to how big the sectors are, how many states they have. My favorite thing to say is that spectral statistics are like the Senate, not the House. They care about how many sectors you have. They don't care about how populated they are. All right, we'll probably need to update that joke for Canada. So the total return probability, just to give you some intuition, if you're never moving between the sectors, then the TRP is just exactly counting the sectors. If you have a high value of the TRP, then you have a lot of memory of where you ended up. And once you've perfectly mixed and all of your PI to I's are just the equilibrium value of PI, then the total return probability will be exactly one. And so we can go and take exactly that random matrix ensemble I showed you before with the two blocks and calculate its SFF, which is here in orange compared to the boring linear one in blue. And you can see there's some enhancement. You can take the ratio, and this ratio is exactly the TRP that you would get from Fermi's golden rule. It's nice exponential. So mission accomplished. We can all celebrate. We know everything there is to know about the early time SFF. But there's late time SFF. So this is just the same graph, but going a little longer in time. And we see there's this discrepancy over here. The SFF for the slow system is suppressed a little bit at late times. And there's a sort of simple explanation for why these SFFs need to have some suppression somewhere, which is a sum rule. So if you just take the SFF, expand it out in one of the 100 different formulas people use for the SFF, and do an integral, you will get that this integral is exactly equal to the size of the Hilbert space times time. So there's this O of t term, which is pretty obvious. And then there's also some fine print, which is that if you don't want to have a t to the zero term, you need the density, the two-point function to go to zero as your states are near each other. So any amount of level repulsion is enough to make this true. I have a whole thing about this. GOE matrices, GOE, GSE, Rosenzweig-Porter, spin glasses, hydrodynamic systems, all of them are going to have this. Even if you have an arbitrarily weak off-diagonal term, if you wait a long enough time and do this integral for the sum rule, you will get that any early time enhancement is paid back later. What goes up must come down. So if this was a mystery novel and we're trying to figure out who stole the missing SFF over here, the answer is the early time thermalization is the culprit. So the sum rule tells you why something is missing, but it doesn't tell you where the extra SFF should come from. And for that, we're going to need to use some 19th century math. So there's this famous math thing called the zeta function. You've probably all heard of it. It's this infinite sum here. And it is not absolutely convergent whenever the real part of S is less than 1, which is a big deal. This Riemann zeta function is like the most important thing in number theory, and everyone in the world believes that all of its zeros have real part, or all of its non-trivial zeros have real part 1/2, which you'll notice is a non-convergent sum. So for like 100 years, whenever mathematicians wanted to study the zeros of the Riemann zeta function, they would, be summing up this incredibly slowly converging series with oscillating terms, and it would take an incredibly long time. They were just summing it up like a bunch of chumps. Until one of them read Bernard Riemann's diary. So this mathematician named Carl Siegel was going through his private notes and noticed some Fermat-style scrawling of a formula and then reproved it in some ridiculously complicated way. And they came up with a good technique for evaluating the Riemann zeta function really far up the critical line. So they had this theta function, which for important functional equation regions, they know exactly the phase of the Riemann zeta function. They can define this z, which is essentially going to be the Riemann zeta function, but real on this line. And it's pretty trivially just equal to this formula. If you know theta, then plug in the definition of zeta. And this formula, if you look at it, you're not going to be like, oh, yeah, that, totally real, right? And what Riemann and later Siegel did was show in a very manifest way why this should be real. They showed that if you, instead of having this infinite sum, truncate it at finite n, then add the complex conjugate, you'll get the z function almost exactly right. And that means you can get the zeta function almost exactly right. And because they're mathematicians, they worked out all the error terms and get it exponentially well and all that. So this is nice if you care about the Riemann zeta function, which maybe you do. But most of us here care about quantum chaos. And for that, we need a very smart guy who we've all heard of named Michael Berry. So Michael Berry, as you all know, is famous for the geometric phase. His most underappreciated achievement, actually, is he levitated a frog via diamagnetism. A lot of people have heard that André Geim did this, but like all great scientific achievements, it was a mix of theory and experiment, and Michael Berry provided the theory. So let's not underappreciate that. But in addition to that, he also worked out some of the connections between the Riemann zeta function and quantum chaos. And particularly worked out his own version of the Riemann-Siegel formula called the look-alike, because it looks like the Riemann-Siegel formula. I'm going to give you a, very, very brief intuition for why this sort of thing should be possible. So we have this thing called the secular determinant, which is kind of going to play the role of the zeta function. It has roots related to the eigenvalues of some unitary, which captures time evolution. And we can expand it in some, way, which has all these a sub k's. And each a sub k is going to be a product of subsets of eigenvalues of psi, sum over all subsets of the product of k eigenvalues. So in some, froofy way, this captures the spectral statistics at time kt, and you can make all this precise if you have enough time and enough paper. And the key ingredient is this very simple relation between ak and a sub n minus k, which is true for any unitary u. So we have n choose k terms on the left, n choose k terms on the right, and they're exactly the same terms, so this is exactly correct. And if k is some small number, this is a link between early time versus late time. So you can take this, and plug it into something called the quantum z function, which is exactly related to that z function we defined earlier. It's just like our quantum zeta function a, but with some ridiculous phases in front to make it real. And you look at it, and you're like, why should this be real? And you can show that using that formula I showed you earlier, which is going to be manifestly real. It's just a thing plus its complex conjugate. And this, is a, makes this realness manifest and lets you calculate these sums more efficiently. So if you take this look-alike formula and the diagonal approximation, then at least for GUE-type systems, you can perfectly get the SFF. You'll get the plateau. And if you don't have a GUE-type system, and instead you have some sort of slow thermalization kind of thing, then you'll get that the This nice sharp cusp gets smoothed out by repeated convolution, by all of your slow modes in your total return probability. And you can sort of see, it does look like it was smoothed out by an exponential function. So the moment of truth, we can just, for the two-block system I showed you earlier, we can just derive this formula, do the convolution. It's like a linear integral. And we can compare some numerics with the Riemann-Siegel formula's prediction. And hey, look, it's, pretty good. And then when you zoom out, it's exactly the same line. So this is a lesson why you should always zoom out. And I do want to talk, I want to raise the alarm, if you will, about large systems. And there's two particular classes I'm worried about, which are hydrodynamic systems and glassy systems. For a hydrodynamic system, remember your sectors are the entire joint distribution of energy in space. So there's going to be one sector with all the energy over here and some of the energy over here, and there's going to be one sector where, I'm burning hot and Matthew Hedrick is freezing cold or whatever. There's this ridiculously large number of sectors, exponential in system size, which means very, very briefly at short times, and lots of papers have found this, there's an exponentially large enhancement of the SFF, which means that around the Heisenberg time, there should be this exponentially large disagreement between pure random matrix theory and any physical system. That doesn't mean, exponentially large does not necessarily mean as big as the SFF gets, but it does mean exponentially large, which where I come from is pretty large. If the situation is even worse for glasses, where these exponentially many slow states can last an exponentially long time, my collaborators and I have looked into this a little bit, but we haven't figured it all out yet. There should be some substantial deviations for any realistic system that we can think of. So the summary for all of you, so we have the spectral form factor, which in addition to measuring level repulsion, also measures the thermalization of a quantum system. Its early time behavior is exactly given by the total return probability. The SFF follows a sum rule, which holds for all kinds of systems, anything with even the slightest amount of level repulsion. And its late time behavior can be given by the Riemann-Siegel lookalike, and also Michael Berry levitated a frog. So that's the talk. Any questions?
No questions from Zoom? Are there any? Okay, if not, let's thank Mike again.
Okay, time for lunch.